Hmm? Ah! Hmm.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Alex.
And I'm Lizzie.
And this is What Is From, a podcast dedicated to the epic show From. And in this episode, we're going to be covering season one, episode 8, Broken Window, Open Door. So how are you doing, Miss? I have a tiara and I want to be a princess today.
Dude, I'm past princess. I am queen.
Empress. You are queen. You are queen of From.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. This was an interesting episode. We had a little, not fallout, but yeah, kind of fallout from the big episode before. So what are some of your first thoughts?
You know, I am still buzzing over this episode. I had seen it before when the show first came out, and I was waiting week by week, and it was painful. But watching it yesterday and taking my notes and basically just drawing it in and letting it run around through my body and just take up residence there, it is so good. I just love this show.
Well, it's interesting because every time we think that they're going to stay on the course, they either bring a new character or they develop another storyline that really kind of furthers the story. And you know, we only have two more episodes to go. It's like, how are they going to put a bow on this that, you know, on a whole season? There's ways that they can do that, but I'm really looking forward to it. My wife is very mad at us for not podcasting earlier this weekend. And
forgiveness.
You know, we usually podcast on a Friday, which has turned into Saturdays lately. And yeah,
you're on Monday.
And we're podcasting on Monday. Hopefully you can get out tonight. But the bottom line is she was asking, what time are you going to be done so we can watch the next episode? Oh, so not that we're going to rush this, but we're kind of rushing it because my wife wants to see the next episode. Now that we talked about all that, what is your first point or scene queen from?
Well, as we discussed, I think just prior, we're going to share our number one. And this is the arrival story of Boyd, Ellis, and Abby. And, I can't believe I had to wait 8 episodes in the first time around. And it's been killing me for us to get to this point so that you could see how they came about. But I got to tell you, I missed a couple things that first time around. I mean, not having to pay attention the way that we do in order to do this podcast. I missed a lot of fine points. And
she's such an interesting character. Yes. And it's a shame that she's only on for a limited amount of time. I wish they could have developed her more. I like what they did. It makes sense, but that doesn't mean that you don't want more. I think she could have been a very valuable asset to the group if she was in the right state of mind.
And it's interesting because she falls apart so quickly. On the day that she loses it, they've been there for a couple of weeks. And, you know, she just comes to this conclusion. And I'm jumping ahead, but she comes to this conclusion that they are in a nightmare. And all she has to do is wake everybody up. And her version of waking everybody up is shooting them to death. But, you know, she starts the episode as someone that's got her act together. And she was a Marine. Boyd refers to her as a badass. You know,
she was the Iron Lady.
Yeah. Like, she has been through a lot and has handled it. And this particular thing is what it took for her to unravel. So the one thing that comes out of this is that they arrive seemingly having no real problem. It looks like they are starting the first day of the rest of their lives, as if Abby and Boyd have now retired from active duty and they're moving from one location to the next to start over, to start the next chapter of their lives. So, I mean, that's my guess based on the fact that they've got the trailer on the back of the family car.
The one thing that I noticed, which is so neat about showing these bottle moments of how people arrive, is how the town was formed now. You know, yeah. The trailer. What was the trailer? The trailer was the jail. The boat key that we saw early on in the first or second episode, that has a relationship to all this.
Yeah, we've been seeing that in several episodes. Like, he pulls it out as a personal talisman almost.
And one of the things that really kind of is interesting about this world that I found about that scene, and we talked about it in the pilot as well, is the fact that the From town gets what they need when they need it. What do I mean by that? They needed an engineer. They got an engineer. They needed that person. They got two. Yes. I mean, but they needed that person like Boyd that was a guy that gets things done. Loaves and fishes, Mr. Loaves and fishes. And I think what's really kind of interesting is that why didn't any of these other people think of just going out there and looking? I mean, we still don't know how long they've been there, you know, digging in those holes or whatever. At the same time, you know, he only went a mile out of the way and he found a goat and he found chickens. So yeah. I'm going to be interested to see the split when that happens. If that happens this season, how that whole split comes about. But I also think it's pretty ironic how they kept flip-flopping from the day, you know, Boyd's story to today, and some of the same issues have come back up.
Yeah.
Meaning community, unity.
Falling apart, yeah.
Falling apart.
When they arrive, these people are just hanging on by their fingernails. And they're spending the night in these dugout holes in the ground that is camouflaged by grass, listening to these things, not howl, but screech. And it is blood-curdling when you hear it. And you can only imagine what was going through the Stevens' family's mind. Not only, you know, they come across the tree in the road, like so many others have. And then they're coming into town at the worst possible moment, at sunset. And Father Cawtry risks his life to bring them in and put them in the ground with them. And why he couldn't, maybe because they couldn't really talk a lot. They don't want to be heard, but you know, not being able to find out what is going on until the next morning after you spend the night listening to these things, screaming and howling and walking over their graves because you can hear the wood cracking.
Right.
it had to have been utterly terrifying. Like, what have you just dropped yourself into? Because they didn't even get a chance to find out that they were driving in circles.
We'll be right back.
Ever wondered what it takes to make it in the movie business? Peel back the curtain with 4-6 Success Filmmaking. 4-6 Success Filmmaking is where filmmakers share their stories and the secrets.
It's beyond competitive out there.
There have been movies that it's taken me 10 years to get made.
Don't wait to create. Like, you've got to just keep making stuff.
Tune in to 4-6 Success Filmmaking for your dose of cinematic realness, direct from the voices that have lived it.
True. They might not have. Who knows? I mean, they could have just been, the tree came out pretty quick because of the time of day. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, what we found from this world is, as dangerous as it is, it does provide the essentials to survive. We still don't know why. We still don't know how it's all come about, but they're not starving. They've never once talked about starvation. They've never once talked about lack of resources except for the peaches. Yeah. And it's just a matter of finding the right resources and having the right people to do that. And I think that what was really nice about this episode was it brought the old, for lack of a better term, the OGs together with the new group, the Matthews, and working together on that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it took someone like Mr. Fish and Loaves, Boyd, to knit them together as a community, because that seems to be his special skill, being organized. He breaks everybody up so that they have jobs. And, you know, he tells them, you know, we're going to dig holes. We're going to organize our resources. He says, we're going to inventory, ration out, and constantly rotate.
I like that. You constantly rotate so you get to know each other, different people. He wanted to have a schedule. He was very militaristic about it, meaning, you know, this is a military operation and this is what has to get done. What I don't understand, and again, I'm just, why Father Khatri was so reactionary and not action oriented. I mean, you'd think a priest would be in that kind of Fish and Loaves attitude as well.
I think he's more of a support position where he, you know, counsels his flock. He comforts his flock. At times he saves his flock, even if it's at the cost of his own life or risking his own life. He puts himself out there. He just may not be that organizational sort, whereas some people come to that naturally. They just put things in a place and they can get things done. And Boyd is the first one to suggest, hey, if these things are only coming out at night, why don't we go into the woods during the day and see what we can find? In his first trip out there, he encounters a German shepherd. And we hear a snapping twig. And then, you know, when he gets a little closer to the dog is like, ah, you know, what are you doing? And then the dog runs away and we hear more snapping twigs. So who do you think, or what do you think that dog was about?
True, it could be. And what were the twigs? Were the twigs the monsters kind of peeking in?
Someone else watching,
like Victor?
I don't think it was Victor. I think whoever was watching, whoever he encountered, I think that person and the dog are together.
Maybe.
And
it's so, this show gives you so many options for theory, And that's what's so great about it. But you're right. It could have been just about anybody. I will say, though, it's very, like I said, it's very interesting how Boyd has been the steering force on their safety and their progression.
Yeah.
It's just so shocking that some of these people just never, they're just surviving. And I understand surviving, but you know, when you drive a car, you're like 10 and two. After a while, you kind of move the hand up to 12 and you're doing that. I mean, you just get a little bit of a comfortability to push the elements, so to speak.
But I don't think that they have felt like they've had that chance to even breathe. I think, you know, I was kind of surprised that Donna hadn't taken the reins a little bit. But then again, you think about Donna's arrival story, and we're not so certain about how long she's been there before Boyd arrives, but you've got Donna's arrival story and it's pretty darn horrific. So it could be just that some of these people are dealing with such severe trauma that they can't get out of their own way. Boyd and family show up, and the only thing they witness is the morning after. So the night of, they don't see anything. They don't lose anybody that they know. But the night after, when they're coming up out of the holes, they're seeing the bodies on the road.
Which was bizarre. Yeah, that was bizarre.
Yeah. Like, you know, where were those people? Were they not hiding in holes? Were they hiding somewhere else? Did they get stuck outside somehow? Didn't plan their day out well. But at any rate, you know, he chases the German Shepherd in the woods. And up till that point, he was marking his trail, so he knew how to get back. He chases the dog and gets lost, which I'm right. Like, capital L, capital O, capital S, capital T. But he gets lost. And so night sets in and he gets stuck out in the woods, I think. And he's hearing the screeching. That's what it was. Okay.
And then he sees the shed.
Well, he falls into a shelter.
Right.
Which looks like it's lined with stones, and it is. But when he looks a little bit more closer, he finds that there are all these stones with carvings on them. They're talismans. And the milkman, he sees the milkman approaching him.
Right.
And the milkman takes a look, and whatever it is, the milkman gets the message, not going to happen, and backs off. And that's when Boyd realizes that this is something that could work. And so he, on his way back into town, he starts to hear the shooting, and he gets there and he discovers there's Abby. And she's shooting the people of the town. And she thinks she's waking them up when she's really just putting them out of their misery. They're either going to die by monster or die by Abby's bullet. Right. So when someone made the wisecrack to Ellis last week about his mother, you know, just shooting off about anything, you know, this is what they were talking about.
Well, he was actually in the hole with them that first night.
Who? Ellis?
The guy. No.
Oh, the guy. Yeah.
The guy. He was in that hole.
Yeah. The Mr. I can't shut up. I know everything.
Yeah.
That guy. Yeah. So, you know, he gives Ellis, you know, the remark in it, and it's like it all goes back to this, and it's something that was witnessed by a large portion of the town, and the only way Abby is stopped is when Abby sees Ellis coming, and of course she's going to want to quote unquote wake her son up
right
from this nightmare. So as she takes aim, that's when Boyd has to do the unthinkable. And when it comes to the children of the parent, they're most likely going to choose the children.
Of course.
So he chooses Ellis. over Abby. And, you know, and the thing was, like, Abby had been walking around town just looking dazed, confused, addled. Like, she was trying to figure it out. And then when Boyd didn't come home, that's when it clicked for her. She's like, it's a nightmare. And what you do when you're in a nightmare is you wake up. And that's why she's shooting up the town.
Absolutely. And, it, you know, Boyd had to do the unthinkable, like you said, which is shoot his wife, who
he loved.
And who was a very important asset when she was straight and knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
It's just interesting how, no matter how strong you are, if you're put into a different situation, you can break like that. And it's just really a shame that that happened, because she could have been a very valuable resource for this group.
Possibly. If she was a badass, she was probably good at fighting. But what we know is that there isn't much need for fighting here.
No, but she, it's a mindset. She could teach people how to have the right mindset. She probably has command troops at one point. So leading people, you know, leadership is an important thing in this, having a chain of command. You know, everybody looks to Boyd as the sheriff. But I really did love how they were going back and forth in time.
Yeah.
And how the similarities to then versus now. We finally understand why Ellis is upset with his father.
Fully.
And what's nice is there was a lot of healing that went on at the end. Because as we know, the show loves to have a little kicker every single time. And that was a great conversation with Boyd and Ellis.
And their reconciliation. I mean, just that Boyd went to see Ellis, and Ellis is sitting there with Fatima, and he's telling him how he feels and that he loves him and that he's got to go do this thing. And he leaves, and Ellis is just sitting there like, you're not going to get anything from me.
Right.
And he leaves, and Fatima gives Ellis a kick in the butt.
And which he needed.
Like, yeah, which is what he needed. She's like, dude, you got a good dad. You know, he's coming here trying to make peace with you, and you're just being a jackass. So, you know, it prompts Ellis to think. And then Ellis goes to Boyd and they hash it out a little bit. And, you know, they part as a reconciled father and son, so that if anything happens to either one of them, they're not leaving one another with loose ends.
Yes. And,
which was important.
They put a nice bow on that temporary situation.
Yeah. Could you imagine, though, if Boyd did what Abby said when Father Cotry comes up and he's like, you got to come with me, don't ask any questions, just come with me. And Abby's like, drive away.
Yeah. And she pulls out her gun.
Yep, she pulls out a gun. Could you just imagine, like, we would never, unless they followed them, we'd never see what happened, you know, after they got caught in the woods, you know. The townsfolk would probably hear the guns going off, and that would be about it.
Yeah. And they would have ripped open those cars like a can opener.
Yeah. Like, nothing stops them. Is there anything else you want to say about that?
Even though Father Cotry is dead, it's still nice that he's still in the show, in the flashbacks. I mean, I know it's not part of that really that storyline, but it's nice to see that he and Donna were there from the beginning with those two. and they have that bond and they've gone through a lot. And that's what this is all about. So yeah, no, I mean, I just love that, that Fatima gave him a kick in the ass and everything happened in a positive way. And that's the one good thing about that, that whole situation. But it was really nice to see Boyd take charge and make sure that things are getting done. You know, people want to have purpose.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you have purpose, whether you're in this this place or you're retired or whatever, it's a different world. I know they're going through the motions. It's really not a perfect world and it's really scary. But at the same time, having purpose is the key. And I think that Boyd and his wife really have, you know, jump-started this group.
What do you think about driving into a town and you see a big barn and it says, save us on it?
Oh, I know.
It's like, what do you think? And then, you know, there's no people around at all. And then, you know, this strange man comes out of nowhere and he's like, you just got to come with me. And Abby's like, drive away, boy. Just
and then they hear that screech.
Oh, that screech is enough to just cause you to get moving. That screech was pretty scary.
I love that he says that's the sound of death.
Yeah.
I think we put a nice bow around that scene / storyline. I know you want to talk about the whole Thomas.
Yeah. You want to transition over to Thomas?
Yeah, I think it would be good.
All right. So where the Stevens come in without seemingly any kind of emotional trauma until a couple weeks later, the Matthews are coming in brokenhearted. They've lost their youngest child, Thomas. So the birth order is Julie, who's much older than Ethan, and then Thomas, who was probably a couple years younger. And, you know, in the time since Thomas has died, the family is experiencing this huge loss. And, you know, the parents are in the process of divorcing and the kids are feeling like invisible and no one knows how to talk to each other about this. So Tabitha finally tells us the story about Thomas, because all we've really known is that they've lost a child and they're not dealing with it very well. And, you know, it's, seems pretty typical of how these things happen. Just an ordinary day. Everybody is doing their thing. The two other kids are in another room doing their thing. What I don't understand, and maybe you can help me with this, is that the changing table seemed to be in the kitchen. And generally, I thought that, you know, it was usually in the baby's room or something like that. But maybe it was just something that worked for them.
It could have just been that way.
Yeah.
I know we never even had a changing table. We just had a dresser.
Yeah.
That we put a pad on. So it just might have been extra storage or whatever.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that Tabitha and Julie finally get to talk and have a real conversation.
It's just, it's finally that Tabitha is talking to Julie, because, you know, parents sometimes don't burden their children with this stuff. They don't open up about it. Both Tabitha and Jim are in the kitchen. They've got the baby between them. And I mean, gosh, I can see this happening, how quickly this happened and how simply it happened. The phone rings. Jim answers the phone. He turns to answer the phone. She needs a diaper. She turns to get a diaper and the baby falls off the changing table.
Right.
It takes, I mean, less than a second for something horrific to change your life. And now you can see why both parents are carrying such guilt, because they both see it as their fault. Like, he didn't have to answer the phone. She could have waited a second, you know, or maybe held on to the baby or something, but you get comfortable. I remember, you know, when my dog got hit and I wasn't holding on to the leash tight enough and I was trusting him too much. And somehow he must have sensed that I wasn't holding on as tight as I normally did. And he just took off on me and that was it. But it just takes that second.
Absolutely. And that 1 second can change your life. And we've all been there in terms of maybe a close call here or there. And some people, God forbid, have had that life-changing moment.
Yeah.
You replay it in your head over and over and over again. And you're just hoping, like Tabitha said, I believe, you know, that it didn't happen. She's like trying to convince herself that it didn't happen. But one thing that I do find interesting is, you know, she still loves her husband, which we knew, but are they getting a divorce? Well, who knows? Yeah. But right now they're kind of in survival mode, just like everybody else. So they're still trying to figure out what they're trying to figure out. And the thing that's kind of an interesting point is, as much as they may dislike, hate, whatever, they're the best people that they know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the devil that you know is better than the devil that you don't right now. I think that that's what's so interesting about this, is that they're colleagues that may fall back in love with each other. But right now, it seems like they're just part of a team.
I don't know. I think that they are falling back in love. I think that the fact that they need each other so much, it's causing them to cleave unto each other again, because they've found a common ground, something that they can pull together and accomplish together. And basically, like, I can't imagine, and I don't think at this point in my life I will ever know, but you know, a parent has multiple children and one of them dies. How do you continue to give the love and attention to the other two or the remaining children while you're mourning the death of one and beating yourself up over it at the same time? And the thing is, like, you don't want to neglect your other children, but the grief is so all-consuming that it's difficult, because, you know, Julie's like, I'm still here. You know, you still have two kids left.
You know, I equate it to my mom. You know, my father died when I was young, and my mom said, you know what, regardless of what I felt, I still had to get you ready for middle school. And it's the same type of thing. You still move on. I shouldn't say you move on. You still slug on because it's responsibility.
And you just have to, because you keep drawing that next breath, you know, and you keep having that next thought. You shed that next tear. Like, it just keeps going.
I will say, though, it was kind of interesting that they only had one scene together. And what I mean by that is, she has her life, he has his life. And one of the things that my wife pointed out, which I find kind of interesting, is they're both going in different directions, meaning he's trying to go up to the sky and she's trying to dig down into the ground.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that means anything.
That's very interesting. I think it does.
But I thought it was a great point to bring up.
Yeah.
And
I think that's a great point. I hadn't thought of that. And yeah, like, he's trying to go up, she's trying to go down. Like, his answer is up, her answer is down.
And
yet they're still kind of working together.
Well, they're working together in the sense that it's progress, and even though they're going in different directions, they're still trying to go in different directions
to solve the same goal. Problem. Yeah.
you know, my wife finally got around to listening to our podcast. And I think she listened to the one with Barbie because she said it was she thought it was pretty good. She had said, you know, we're bringing up interesting points and whatever else, you know, her questions are, that's such a great point that if I didn't give her credit, I would be remiss, but it's going to be interesting to see if that actually has anything to do with the story. That's all. I mean,
I think it does. It all does. So far, they've been pretty good. I don't feel like anything's been wasted yet.
No.
Even though, you know, we're 8 episodes in, we know so much more. They keep revealing more and more. I still feel like everything is relevant.
Now, do you have any other notes on the baby?
I don't. That was all I thought we needed to talk about.
Okay.
So what is your number 3?
Well, my next point, I don't know what number it is.
It would be number 3.
Okay. Is the way the community came together. So
which time?
What's that?
Which time?
Exactly. No, I want to go through the progression because I think it's an important progression to go through.
Okay.
So we've got Jim is at home talking to his daughter. All of a sudden, the greatest character ever.
Oh my God. I love him.
Wait, let's just backtrack. He's all pissed because the Colony House people aren't following the rules. Now, I know that's a throwaway scene, but I really do believe that's an important scene to me because of who he is.
I don't think it's a throwaway scene at all. Like, well, I agree with you. I don't think it's not.
I think that it shows what he's about. He's a math science guy. And that doesn't compute to him. You know, he's just trying to find answers where they've been there for a while. So the answers aren't always, they're not always trying to find answers. And I love this, the line from the girl that he took the bike from. Well, you're the one that thought this was a really big, elaborate escape room. How's that working out for you? But the best part of it is how he asks for where's Victor squatting.
Yeah.
And then he turns it around on Kenny and he's like, see, that's community cooperation here. Yeah. But of course, Kenny just rolls his eyes because, you know, they're like two brothers that fight. But then he goes to the Matthews house. And of course, Jim, who's as wound as tight as anybody can be, is just like, dude, do you realize what just happened? But again, Jade is so focused on results and product and getting it out information, because that's what he's done his whole life, having, you know, underlings and whatever else. He doesn't see the forest for the trees. He doesn't know about those social graces, so to speak, that normal people know.
Yeah, he is missing something.
But I love the conversation between him and Jim. He's like, as batshit crazy as you were, it worked. Even though you ran, now he had every right to run because, you know, Jim didn't know what he saw, but we got static. And his crazy idea, Jim's crazy idea, is what kind of rallies everybody together. And what I find really fascinating about this is, and you know, I think of Tesla and Edison and all these other, you know, great rivals. The person that starts it isn't necessarily the person that finishes it and gets credit for it.
Right.
But because they might not be the right person for the job. Well, Jade's the right person behind the scenes, where Jim is the guy that can sell it.
Yeah.
And if you notice, when they went together everywhere,
yeah,
he shut up finally. Jim did the talking because he knew, I'm an idiot when it comes to social graces, but I'm not an idiot when it comes to the math. So he is learning.
Or, yeah, I mean, I think he's doing that trial and error thing, you know, where, all right, A didn't work. I'm going to transition to B because it's, you know, it's repeatedly not working. So I transition to B. When B is not enough, then I go to C. So he knows enough to move on to the next option.
But what I find really fascinating, if you go back to the last episode, Jim's talking to Tabitha and he's like, well, all I have to do is take up all the resources, all the batteries, all the power. Oh yeah, by the way, put it on some land that nobody wants us to, because it's the other village, so to speak, land. And if it doesn't work, they're all going to kill me.
Yeah.
But what was neat was, you know, things obviously happen for a reason. And I thought it was really amazing that and fortuitous that this happened to rally everybody back. And that's the main thing. I go to that because they go to Donna, and she's putting body parts in and she's sulking and she's not the badass as Kenny likes to say, but she's
got a heart. That's the thing. She's got a heart. She's a porcupine with the quills on the outside, but the soft underbelly.
But also, what the hell? Nobody's using the house anyways. You might as well do something. Yeah. If you want to do that, what the hell? But and what I find really great about this story is everybody's hard exterior. They all want to go home.
Yeah.
Even though they don't talk about it, they still all want to go home and they're still trying to find a way.
Yeah. No one's having that good of a time.
Right. Absolutely. So that said, do you have anything on those two or that situation?
This happened to be part of my number three. Also.
Okay.
I'm looking at, you know, I just watched this again yesterday and all it takes is 24 hours for me to forget something. But I had maybe, I don't know if I'd go so far as an epiphany, but I had something about Jim. You know, it was comical. He comes over and he busts in. He just busts into the house without even knocking.
Oh, I know. Jade's an ass.
Yeah. He wants to talk to Julie. I mean, he's clearly lacking on his social graces. And, you know, Julie's been through a lot. Jim is sitting there with her and she's upset. And then this guy comes barreling in and, you know, he pushes him out of the house. So I can't remember what made me think about this, but I think that something in Jade's brain enables him to connect to the memory of this place. And so what it got me thinking was about Einstein and how Einstein believed that at the moment of the Big Bang, that all time started. And since that point, all time coexists simultaneously. And so Jade has had at least two instances of, for lack of a better term, of time travel. You know, he sees the guy in the root cellar, the same root cellar that Julie ends up in. And Julie doesn't see that guy.
And Victor came out of.
Yep. But then Jade just sees the Civil War soldier.
Right.
You know, that's like 1860s. It's not 2022. And it's as real to him as if it is that moment in time. And that's what I'm wondering. If Jade is able to do something with the fourth dimension without him realizing he's able to do it. But because of the way his brain works, it's like it's put being in this place has kind of turned that on, possibly, because he's seeing the symbol that nobody else is seeing.
But is appeared before in the world.
Right. Someone else has seen it. Someone else has seen it. And they wrote, you know, they had that whole notebook about it. But it's not like in storage, you know, there's a bunch of those notebooks. Nobody else is talking about it. So it just kind of tells me that it takes someone with a certain type of brain to access that.
I mean, you know, I'm spitballing here. It could be Victor's family, one of Victor's family.
Because
because the picture was of a guy and Victor's in the background. So right. It's either somebody that knows Victor from, or it's a family member or something. Because they were smiling, whatever else.
Yeah, but I think it could have just even been a stranger.
It could be. It should just be another.
It's outside of a diner. Like we stopped, we're on a road trip, you know, and where do you, you stop at a diner to eat. Or
again, what I find interesting about that is that it was sealed in the book.
So that it wouldn't get lost.
Also, that the sign just keeps popping up. So yeah, there is something with it. I hope they can maybe give us something in the next two episodes, and definitely next year when it comes back.
Did someone say February?
Yeah, it's February of next year. That was in our notes. So we've got a couple of months to stew over this. And, you know, we're going to keep it alive because I think we might have a couple of special things down the road, which
I know we might not, definitely do.
We might not talk about this podcast, but we'll definitely talk about in the next two.
Well, I can't keep my trap shut most likely,
I know.
But anyway, that's just me. All right. So what is your number four?
My number four is Kenny.
Oh my God. My number four is Kenny.
Well, because great minds think alike. You know, Kenny has been through the ringer, and a couple of important things happened to Kenny this episode.
Yeah.
One, he got a kiss from his lesbian girlfriend.
Yeah, but that was a friendly kiss. And just like a man to over interpret that.
Oh, come on. It's the only, you know, it's not a target rich environment here.
I know, but.
They like each other. I don't care what you.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know.
Wars have been fought for less.
I don't know. I think
I don't know either. But it was man. Hey, it put a smile on the guy's face. It put a smile on her face. Life is good.
I don't know if it was the same smile on her face though.
Well, she was doing the kissing, so
that was a friendly gesture. I kissed someone for a Pop-Tart on the cheek.
Well, okay. What do I know? That's why I'm a boy and I don't know what I'm doing. But the more important thing was he basically did a smackdown with Donna, with the two main characters.
Yeah, Donna and Boyd.
And Boyd. I mean, he basically, you know, said enough already.
Yeah.
And, you know, the boy has become the man kind of speech. And I know the listeners, if they've seen this episode, they understand what I'm talking about. It was a great speech by Kenny basically saying, shit or get off the pot. What are we doing here? What's the goal? The goal is to get out of here. Boyd, if you're going to get out of here, it's time to go. Yeah. You told me it's time. Well, now I'm stepping up. And, you know, I love that he also points his finger at Donna because she's such a good mainstay. Regardless of what Kenny does, him being the sheriff or whatever, the deputy or whatever, she still has a ton of influence and she needs to get out of her funk and move on. Now, I know that's really easy to say, but it's similar to, you know, The Walking Dead and a lot of these other shows where, yes, people die. It's awful, but we don't have time to mourn. We have time to keep going. Yeah. And I love that he's like, if you guys don't want to go forward, then just put a bullet in your mouth right now and call it quits.
Yeah, there's no point.
And, you know, the best line of the whole entire thing is when he leaves and Donna says, I didn't think the little shit had him in, had it in him. Yeah. I mean, that was the best part. But the only problem with that scene that I really had a problem with is Boyd said to Donna, take a walk with me and I'll explain what's going on. And they didn't show it.
Well, they do that all the time.
No, I know that, but
not,
it's just like
thoroughly in this show, but you know, I think basically, even though we didn't see him tell Donna, they show us what's going on.
No, I understand that. I was just curious to see if he told her about Sarah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. So
what were your thoughts on it?
I'm going to jump in on Kenny as well, because, you know, Boyd has been telling Kenny, you've got to start stepping up. This is going to be your town. People are going to be looking for you, looking to you. And, you know, Kenny's not ready or doesn't think that he's ready to take it over. And all of a sudden, when he's watching Boyd and Donna go round and round, it just hits him that if he doesn't step in and do some pushing, nothing's going to get done. And so, you know, he starts right there. And then when there's the run on the diner, he rushes in and he straightens that right out, because, you know, the town people are complaining that the colony people are taking up all the resources. You know, they're trying to hoard our stuff that we've been, you know, we've had access to just because they don't have access at their place. And you can see how that would happen, you know. And it's funny that Mrs. Liu has spoken two English words and one of them is scared. Like,
yes,
of course she knows that word. But, you know, Kenny does something that Boyd was unable to do. And it was because of what Abby had done. Things had really split, because it seems that Donna might have been living down in the town until Abby's bad day.
And she almost got shot.
Right. Because she could have been the next person to wake up. And so Kenny takes this opportunity and he says, look, there's no more colony house. There's no more town. We are one group. We are in this together. We're going to do this together. And, you know, Donna puts her two cents in, like, you know, that she's buying into this. And she's like, don't be shitty to your hosts.
Yeah, I love that. But then it also
had to say it, like, they respect Donna. And if Donna is telling them this is what you've got to do, you know, because it would, she backed Kenny up. She let Kenny speak and then she backed him up by her saying that, told all the colony people that she agreed with what Kenny was saying.
And she also agreed with Jim.
Yeah.
Which was huge, because, again, what does it come back to? Purpose.
Right.
And to rubber stamp or to stamp this, these two speeches, it just proves that she has more in her than she thinks she does.
Right.
Because it is water under the bridge. And obviously this episode, one of the threads is reconciliation.
Right.
You know, Colony House is reconciling with the town, vice versa.
Donna reconciling with Boyd.
And Ellis, which was my next point, but is reconciling is reconciling with his dad.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a lot of splitting things up, but a lot of gluing them back together, and I think in a much stronger way. It was, oh God, it was just such a rich episode that, you know, just.
I was a little disappointed in the fact that when they had that conversation, Ellis and Boyd, you knew it was going to end. And you're like, damn it, this, I'm going to have to wait till next episode. And, but it was a nice bow. It's just that. I wish it could have gone a little bit further, you know.
Oh, but what did you want them to say?
Oh, no, no, no. I just wanted the show to go farther. Regardless of, no, that's what I mean. No, oh, no, no. I thought the conversation was, but you know, you're like, oh, this is a perfect ending spot. And it's like, no, yeah. I wanted to keep going. Not the conversation, but the show.
I'm the only one that doesn't want to leave from.
No, I'm saying I want to see what's happening. I want to,
I know, me too. I don't want to leave from. I want to stay there.
Well, it's like Groundhog Day there. You can, if you stay there, you're just going to have the same exact thing. But,
well, you know what? And I think that they were having the same exact thing. I think they were stuck in Groundhog Day for a while. And then, you know, Boyd comes along and shakes things up a bit, and then they get stuck again, and then Boyd comes along. Oh, yeah. You know, I wanted to mention Julie looking at those pictures.
Oh, and yeah.
You know, like, I didn't connect it last week, but remember how Victor puts her out the window. He puts something over her shoulder, and she goes,
the license plates. The license plates and the pictures.
Yeah, I didn't know what that was. I thought it was a Dr. Seuss book or something. I didn't know what that was. And I knew clearly he had his lunchbox. And so she ends up at her house with the pictures, and she's looking at them, and we see this guy, and he's got a goat. And I'm like, I think that that's Boyd.
Right.
Then later on, the exact scene is created, and Boyd is wearing this tan jacket, like a, mm-hmm. not quite a windbreaker, but like a light navy canvas jacket. And, you know, he hasn't been wearing that. He's been wearing like a chamois shirt, like a tan chamois shirt. And with blood all over it, and a blazer, and with his star on his belt. And when he gets ready to go, he takes off the shirt, takes off the blazer, takes off the star, and he pulls that jacket out, and that jacket is still clean. And he puts that jacket on. And then when we see him in the woods with Sarah, he's got the jacket on.
Yeah.
And, you know, underneath the backpack. And, you know, I believed Sarah when she said, don't worry, I'm not going anywhere, you know? And she was still there when he came back, and she got to witness the reconciliation. So someone could definitely say it happened, but, you know, we didn't have a ton of Sarah time. You know, they start off on their journey. So that's next episode, I'm sure.
I hope so. Yeah.
So I think I just did my number five.
Which was what?
I don't even know.
I have to say, you know, when I was looking at this episode, the main things for me were obviously the reconciliation, obviously the prequel with Abby and
Iron Abbey.
I just love that we were getting answers. Yes, there's always questions, but they're not waiting too long to give us answers, so that hopefully next season we can really dive into wherever they want to take us, because we've got all that backstory. So if a character is lost or is does something, we understand the bigger picture of it. And I think that's just what makes it. It's such an interesting thing. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with this antenna. I'm also looking forward to seeing what happens to the big hole.
Yeah.
If it causes a problem, you know, maybe somebody may die in either situation. I don't know if anybody else knows about the hole. You know, maybe if this is kind of a secret thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
Where's Victor?
We don't see Victor in this episode. Hey, did you know that the term backstory was coined from Lost?
Really?
That's where that term comes from.
Well, they're doing a great job of making sure that we say it.
Yeah. I mean, no one ever said backstory.
Wow. What did they used to say then?
It was, it's going to come back to me. A flashback.
Okay.
Flashback was the term. And they created backstories. Because flashback, it's something quick. You get a snippet of something.
Right.
But,
and they've had those too.
Yeah, they've had those. But I don't know. But I have some notes.
Please.
So Sarah said something pretty interesting, which we don't get an answer for. When Boyd tells her about Father Cottry, she asks about Ellis. What happened to Ellis? Like, did Ellis die? And we don't know why, but she asks about it. You know, so I just wanted to plant that one.
Well, maybe because it's her son. But yeah, I understand why.
No, not Sarah doesn't have a son.
I meant his son. Maybe it's Boyd's. I'm saying maybe because it's Boyd's son. But at the same time, I did pick up on that as well. It was just kind of a weird thing. But at the same time, I think he did say something about Colony House. So I'm going to have to rewatch it again. I mean, no, I just watched it before.
He hadn't said anything about it. He hadn't said anything. He tells her about Cottry because she's like, where's Father Cottry?
Right. He doesn't.
She thought Father Cottry was coming with them because he was supposed to. And he tells him that he didn't make it. And she says, well, what about Ellis? Did Ellis make it?
Right.
Out of everybody that she could ask about. So it just comes up out of nowhere. So another note, you already mentioned it, Jade being trolled by the girl that comes to move into Mrs. Lou's house.
That was great.
Yeah, love that. I already mentioned Mrs. Lou knowing the word scared, and that Kenny's dad's name was Bing John. The Julie with the pictures with Boyd and the goat. And then what was the Donna permission? I know let's note G. I have it. I labeled all my notes.
Donna permission? G.
Yeah.
They asked for permission.
Yeah. So they got permission.
The tower.
Yeah.
When she was doing the limbs and she's like, I don't care. Nobody's using it anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are all my notes. The only mystery that we have for this week has to do with the monsters. We got a little town mystery, you know, in that they were hiding in holes in the ground to get through the night. But the monster mystery is that we hear them screeching, and it is a god-awful noise, right? But then when Boyd brings back the talismans, they go to whispers.
I was just about to say that, and he asks Sarah, why is that? And I love his answer after Sarah says, I don't know. And it's like, basically, that these monsters aren't going to tell us anything. They're going to be just as secretive. They don't give a crap. And we're just where we started before.
Well, you know, the thing is, I think that there is some kind of balance between good and evil. There's some kind of fight going on between good and evil. I think that the dog belongs to someone good. And it could have been an accident that Boyd ran into the dog and the dog's master in the woods. There was clearly something else there because of the twigs snapping. And they made a point of those twigs snapping. But right. The fact that, you know, the townsfolk hadn't had the guts, the fortitude to go out and scavenge for anything.
And that makes me mad. Because
it doesn't make me mad.
I would have been that guy that would have gone out.
Yeah, but they didn't have anyone like that. Because what Boyd did, that was his job, Mr. Fish and Loaves. He would find this stuff, you know, like when he was in the service, he was all about putting it together and finding whatever it was needed to, you know, like the chewing gum, to just take the gum and stick two things together. And that's what he did. And so he realized, wait a minute, we are overlooking this entire possibility of resources out there. And he goes out there and right off the bat, he finds a goat and and there's chickens.
I hate to date myself, but you know, you're in this town. It doesn't have much. I want my MTV, so to speak. You know, I want to see what else is out there because who knows?
Who knows?
And again, it's a different type of person. It's a different type of person.
No one knows if those things are just kicking around during the daylight.
True.
You know, that they are just hiding. Because, like, you know, there's dark spots in the woods. And Boyd was kind of in a dark spot. Like, it was very shady where he was when he encountered the dog. So you don't know what's out there in the woods. Like,
no, you are right. It's just, it's one of those things I have to think
just
about.
Seeing the milkman come up on Boyd,
that guy's scary. No, the scariest one is the guy that was in the house.
That guy
still haunts me.
You know who he reminds me of with that smile is the Tic Tac guy Lou in Seinfeld. That he walks quietly and then he just walks up behind Elaine and she gives him the Tic Tacs because he has that same kind of smile. You know,
right?
Ooh, it's creepy. And I swear to God, that guy is the best. The best. That monster just hits it out of the park,
right?
As far as I'm concerned. So I have some news from the sheriff.
Sure.
We've already discussed it. But they will be back in February.
Really? I didn't know that. No, most of the listeners did know that. And I believe that they're filming in currently. And I believe, is it Nova Scotia where they film this?
Yeah, they're filming in Nova Scotia.
So
they're on the East Coast. They're in our time zone.
So if you want to just pop on up there, Framily, you know, just pop on up. I don't think there'll be a problem. You know, just say, hey, hopefully you can get home.
Yeah.
If you see any logs across the road, you're screwed.
It's all
but, you never know. Who knows? Who knows?
Well, you know who we didn't mention was the guy that plays Tom.
Yes.
He had a screaming line in this week's episode at the diner.
Yes,
and
he did.
I was like, Tom! So he stopped by.
Yes.
To say hi to you.
Yes, he did.
And you were thrilled.
I was thrilled. No, just so you guys know, the actor that played Tom, I had tagged him and a bunch of other of the actors, and he was nice enough to reply. And he had said that he is a friend of the podcast. He's listened to a couple episodes, probably the one that Barbie was on. And he said he loved it.
Stop it.
But more importantly, he was just really grateful that we're talking about the show.
Yeah.
And I think that that's as someone that likes the show and is now loving the show, it's always nice to hear that there's that mutual love there. I mean, you've gone to conventions. Yeah. I've gone to a couple of conventions. And when you meet these actors and writers and producers or whatever else, you know, they have a vision. And when people get it, it's pretty exciting. And yeah. I, you know, hopefully down the road, maybe we can get them on or any of the other actors. I know I've been kind of trolling the internet/websites, YouTube, as well as some of the From groups, and they are doing interviews out there. Yeah. So they're really trying to
tag us in one.
Yes.
Yeah. And I started to watch that, but it came up too close to recording time. So
right.
I didn't finish it, but it was with Ian Calata and Harold.
Yes.
So, or is it Catalina?
It's Catalina. Yes.
Catalina.
Tabitha, for those of you that don't know, but how would you not, how could you not know if you're listening to the podcast? By the way, and I said this to my wife, they really need to they need to change the gentleman that plays Ellis and Fatima, because clearly they did not get people that were beautiful enough. I mean, God damn, could they be any more gorgeous?
Goodness, I know.
I mean, they're both.
She's like ethereal.
And she's just wonderful. She's acting wonderful. And the same thing with the actor that plays Alice. I mean, their acting is superb, but they really did a great job of casting everybody. I really do believe they did a great job of having all shapes and sizes and backgrounds and personalities. And I really can't wait for February when we can start churning this out on Monday, you know, having it go down on or released on Mondays or Tuesdays so that people can really start getting into the theories and things like that again.
Yeah.
Any other news?
Yeah. We are going to have some prizes. Once I get them in hand and Alex and I have a chance to look them over and figure out what we're going to do, we will figure out how you can have a chance to get a prize.
And hopefully I can get a prize, maybe. If I answer the question or figure out whatever Lizzie decides to come up with.
Well, you know, you can help figure it out too, you know.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, I know you love giving away stuff.
I know.
And it's all coming to you. And, you know, you're down in the Atlanta area and I'm up in the New Jersey area. So yeah. I may have to. You know,
I might drop it off at your house on my way.
If you did, I would love it. Nothing would be more amazing than for you to come up to New Jersey. It might be a little too hot for you because we had a hot spell. But
I'm in Georgia.
I know. I'm saying that jokingly. But I'll tell you, you know, right now it's pretty good. It rained today, but.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It was like thunder and lightning, like serious boomers today.
Was it? Yeah, we had a couple. We had an all day rainstorm, but yeah. If you want to drive up here or fly up here, I would be. Well, you need to come up anyways because the Walking Dead Museum is in New York City.
I know. I want to go see that, and then I'll just go right over to Nova Scotia.
Well, you know what? Yeah, I don't think my wife would notice if we went. You and I, and you know what? We've got a big enough car. We'll just throw you. We'll throw you in the back seat. Lucy's got the car seat.
Yeah.
We got a Honda Element. It's perfect. We'll just split the gas. You know, we'll take a mortgage out for gas.
Oh my! I know. I think I got off light today. $50 filled.
Oh, good. Man, my Civic is doing about $30 to $40 to fill it up.
It's still
so crazy. That's a lot. That just makes me so happy since I bought a car that is supposed to be good on gas mileage.
Yeah.
We in terms of the prizes, I was really happily, I got a text from you and I can't wait to see what they come up with.
Oh, it's going to be good.
You haven't told me yet. So you told me that it's going to be something over the top amazing.
Yeah.
And if we get it, you get your own monster that comes to your house at night.
Yeah.
Only one problem. It's a one-time use for a family.
Dude, I already have a monster that comes at night. I'm not happy about it. So, anyway.
Yes, anyway.
I just want to say, Jody, your words last week about my book, I just floated on those all week. That meant so much to me. So I thank you. I thank you. I thank you. That was really awesome.
That being said, I know a couple of our listeners who usually write feedback in, for whatever reason, it was kind of a perfect storm. We didn't get any feedback this week, but I just happened to, I talked to a couple of them and they're like, things got busy and I didn't get a chance to record. I know we can't wait to hear that Australian accent again. And so, no feedback, but hopefully next week we'll get feedback for next week's episode as well as this week's.
We got feedback from the guy that plays Tom.
Yes, we did. I'm sorry, we did. We did.
That was awesome.
And to make it worse, but to make it better, I want to make sure I get it's Riley Price, I believe. And I want to make sure I get his name right because he was nice enough it's Reed Price. And he was really nice enough to say something. I don't know if you guys already, if you don't follow him on Instagram, I know his brother is a musician. He's got some albums out. So I've been kind of Instagram stalking him a little bit just to find out a little bit more. But like I said, they're very busy trying to get the season out and we just can't wait for maybe December and January when the publicity starts. So hopefully we can really get some juicy tidbits for next season.
And listeners, if you could, I'm just going to ask for a favor. I've been looking for other From podcasts. I can't find any. So if you know of one, could you just drop us a line and let me know? I would certainly like to listen to them. Of course, it'd be really kind of cool to be the only one, but I find that hard to believe with such a great show that someone else is not talking about this. I always like to get other people's insight into these things. And I'll be like, oh my God, I should have said that. Why didn't I think of that? I've podcasted about the Walking Dead franchise for years and I have listened to so many podcasts, about the show aside. Well, I don't even listen to my own anymore, but yeah. So anyway, I think that's it. So, thanks for listening, everybody. We love to visit with you each week.
Well, I know we only have two more episodes, but if you do like the podcast and you want to give us a subscribe, hit us on the subscribe button, or even if you want to do a review, I know Lizzie loves 5 stars. It matches her tiara, which has 5 stars on it tonight.
Yeah.
Also, like I said, if you want to write any type of feedback about this episode or any of the previous episodes, you can go to podcastica.com and you can actually click and leave a voicemail or you can leave an email. Or if you're on the Facebook, we're in both of the From Facebook groups, as well as you can go to the Podcastica group as well and leave any type of feedback about the show that you want to talk about. If you do leave a voicemail though, try to keep it to like 2-2.5 minutes. It just gets a little long and that's pretty much it. What else you got there?
Well, you know, while you're at podcastica.com, please remember to check out the other shows. There's always something new to listen to there. And I know that they are currently working their way through Stranger Things.
Yes. Just finished Obi-Wan, which if you are a Star Wars fan and you have a box of tissues, watch it. And then if you want another box of tissues, listen to the podcast on it, because it was heart-wrenching.
Huh. I'm not a Star Wars person, but that makes me want to find out what everyone's crying about.
Oh, it was so emotional. I know Jason and Lucy are going to be doing some top five moments of horror.
Speaking of horror, I want to see The Black Telephone.
Oh, yeah, that looks good.
Oh, my God, I want to see that so bad. I'd love to see it with my friend Desiree. I don't even know how we'd make that work right now. But anyway, so next week, we'll next be covering.
Yes, next week, we are going to be doing episode one. I'm sorry, I keep season doing that wrong. One. Season one, episode nine. It's called Into the Woods. And we'll see what happens when Boyd and Sarah go into the woods. Maybe they just find some wolf that looks like grandma, or they might find something else. Yeah, that's what we're doing. And you know, that's what it is.
Yeah. So thanks for coming along on the ride. That's our show.
Thanks for listening. And the bell is starting to ring. So it's time to go home before it gets dark.